This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, powered by the Family Research Council, your embassy of faith, family, and freedom in the heart of our nation's capital. Now, here's your host, FRC President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Wednesday edition, a big news day in Washington. Once again, Congress is facing a deadline to fund the government. There are a lot of negotiations going on to try to keep the government from shutting down again, which will happen if a deal is not reached before midnight tomorrow. Now, the Senate has, they're sending over a two-year budget deal, but conservatives in the House are concerned, and rightfully so, because it calls for raising budget caps, which means more government spending. Founding chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan, will join us with the latest a little later here on Washington Watch. And with less than 1 week on the job, he is already hard at work, bringing religious freedom to the forefront of America's foreign policy, giving his first speech as U.S. Ambassador at Large for Religious Freedom yesterday. Ambassador Sam Brownback is here in just a moment. Also, there was a time when public policy encouraged fatherhood, recognizing the vital role of fathers in the lives of their children. Not so in today's world, where sexual anarchy is working feverishly to suppress reality. Fox News' Todd Starnes is here with the latest example of the totalitarian left at a school in New York, where the father-daughter dance was canceled for being too exclusive by using outdated terms like father and daughter. And yesterday we talked with Congressman Tim Walberg about the Higher Education Reauthorization Act, PROSPER, which, among other things, will protect free speech on college and university campuses. Unfortunately, it won't come in time to stop the University of Central Oklahoma from drowning the freedoms of Answers in Genesis's Ken Ham. Ken Ham joins us later here on Washington Watch with the details. All right, the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you happen to miss anything on your way home, you can check it out later. It's all archived at TonyPerkins.com. And let me again remind you, a few spots left on our upcoming tour of the Holy Land. We'll be going April 17th, and we've got a few seats left. We'll be joined by former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, General Jerry Boykin, former Ambassador for Human Rights to the UN, Ken Blackwell, and New York Times bestselling author Joel Rosenberg. That's coming up April the 17th. If you'd like to be a part of it, check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right. I was privileged to be on hand last Thursday when former Kansas Governor Sam Brownback was officially sworn in as U.S. Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom. Ambassador Brownback was also a former member of the U.S. Senate, where he represented Kansas. He was sworn in at the White House by Vice President Mike Pence. Ambassador Brownback has a long track record as a proponent for religious freedom and human rights, and it's a privilege to welcome him back to Washington Watch as ambassador. Ambassador Brownback, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks, Tony. Really appreciate you. Appreciate the program that you guys put on and all that you guys stand for. Keep fighting. Keep fighting strong.
Well, I know you're excited about the new opportunity. I know the challenges could not be greater. When you look across the landscape globally, what is your assessment of religious freedom?
It's under attack. It's perhaps never been worse than it is now for as far as the level of religious persecution that's taking place. It takes place in many ways and forms, from people being beheaded because they're Christians, to people being denied their medical services or being ousted from countries because they're not Buddhist in some places. It's unfortunately, the state of religious freedom is on the decline. But I have to say, too, I think this administration, the Trump administration, really needs to stop that decline and reverse it and see religious freedom expand and to use the tools available for the United States government to push religious freedom around the world for all people of all types of faith.
And I think evidence of that commitment is the selection, the nomination, and the push to confirm you as ambassador at large for that post. This is something that's been a priority, at least in the stated law, the statutes, going back to the late 90s. Former Congressman Frank Wolf of Virginia kind of championing that issue. And we've seen in the last administration the neglect, the void of leadership on this issue. And, of course, what it's led to is an increase of the influence of the tyrants. As you you're just getting your feet on the ground, I can only imagine what the first week has been like. What will be your initial focus as you you begin to try to wrap your head around the global nature of this problem?
There's a lot to do, but you know, initially, Tony, what I'm looking at is northern Iraq and Syria because of the religious cleansing that has taken place there of Yazidis and Christians, and then Burma. Of what's taking place there, of the Muslim minority being pushed out into Bangladesh. There's no shortage of issues, unfortunately. There's others taking place in many other places around the world. Nigeria, unfortunately, situations in China, India. I could just really rattle off quite a few, but those two that I mentioned are the ones that I'm looking at initially being the ones I want to focus on the most to really try to move the agenda forward and help these persecuted religious minorities.
Of course, the 1948 Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which the UN adopted, which was pushed by Eleanor Roosevelt, who actually helped really push that through the UN, makes very clear that religious freedom is the right to choose your religion or change your religion, which is the definition that the United States has used. And many countries have signed on to that. But there's been no one who has really held it up as the standard of what religious liberty is. This comes back to our State Department. I'm hoping that under your influence, we'll see the State Department putting a higher priority once again on religious freedom as something that America wants to export.
I agree, Tony. You know, I helped carry that 1998 bill when we first put this into law and created the Office of the Ambassador-at-Large for International Religious Freedom. And it was because we weren't getting any support, not my estimation, or very little, out of the State Department. They just really didn't want to deal with religion. They kind of saw it as a complicating factor and not something that helps good foreign policy. We got plenty of other things to do. A number of us in the Congress were going, no, this is a foundational issue, and you've got to get this human right first. This is the first human right, what you do with your own soul. And if you get this one right, the others will follow from it. A, B, now we've got the studies that show you'll have better security and less terrorism. If you let people practice their faith the way they see fit to do, they're not going to fight you. They're going to use the lawful means at their disposal. And the amount of terrorism goes down and the amount of security goes up for a nation if people are free to practice their faith.
Yeah, what's fascinating about that, Ambassador, is not only is the issue of security there, but also economic development and growth. Those countries that have the strongest laws protecting religious freedom also have the strongest laws protecting free market principles, which lead to economic growth.
They do. These go hand in hand. But the thing that I'm really excited about in this, Tony, is I really think we've got a moment now where things can start to move. We've got the studies now that show this leads to greater security. We know about it on economic fronts. But it's also that there's a globalization, I think, that's being realized that I think a lot of people thought that religion was going to fade as a matter of interest around the world, that reason was going to take over. But the opposite has happened. We've had people's faith grow around the world. And to be able to then accommodate that in a growing nation and a diverse area, you need to allow this religious freedom. So it seems like the moment is right for this decline to stop and an increase to move forward. And it's part of why I'm excited about getting into this role.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you here with us on this Wednesday afternoon. Ambassador Sam Brownback is my guest. He is Ambassador-at-Large for Religious Freedom, just newly sworn into that post last Thursday. You know, Ambassador, a lot of folks, not a lot of folks, there are some critics among the, I'm going to say the evangelical world that say that, and even the media, that President Trump is simply giving lip service to religious freedom. I push back on that because I see a real commitment to this. And, I mean, again, his selecting you for this post would suggest to me that he's serious about dealing with this issue and not just looking for window dressing or for some type of religious parade with no substance.
I agree with that. You know, I mean, I am who I am, Tony. I've got a long track record of public service. I'm a social conservative. I'm a well-known person of faith. I am a fight to get through the Senate. And indeed, the vice president had to vote twice to get me through the Senate on tie votes. Well, that's not something you're just going to do for window dressing. You're doing that because, look, I think this is the guy that can do the job and is going to push hard, and I'm going to push hard to get him there. That was there. The office has been well-staffed. The vice president swore me in. The vice president is personally vested in this. He's the one that called me, really recruited me into the job. This administration is vested in this, and I think now what you're going to see is them willing to use the teeth that are in the laws to be able to push religious freedom like it's never been pushed before. And that's going to be, you know, partially up to me, too, and to some of your listeners to push the administration and the public officials to say religious freedom is central. I want to see the administration do this.
And that's what I want to ask you next, Ambassador, is how can our listeners and the churches, the pastors across this country, help raise the profile of this issue? Because I believe that as Christians, we have an obligation to be concerned about our neighbors, whether they're one block away or one continent away. We still have an obligation to speak up for them.
You know, I think what a lot of the pastors and people can do is just put out some of the stories. I met today with a Syrian Orthodox community that's in northern Iraq and have been driven out of there, and a number of their people have been trafficked. Putting those stories out or putting them up on a video site. I met yesterday with an Yazidi woman who had been trafficked and her family members killed in the Nineveh Plains. They're going to have a documentary. There is a documentary out now on her showing that documentary so that people can see these are real people, real lives that represent hundreds of thousands of people that have been persecuted simply because they were not the dominant faith
right,
in their area.
Right.
And that, yeah, I think those can be helpful.
I think I know who you're talking about. I hosted her at a Council for National Policy meeting because I do think that oftentimes we get tunnel vision, only see what's happening here. And we do have, as a leader, as a nation that is in a leadership role, we have an obligation to lead out on these, what you say, fundamental freedoms. Because without religious freedom, there can be no true freedom. Ambassador, I want to thank you for joining us. We look forward to locking arms with you to take this message across this country and literally around the globe.
God bless you and appreciate your prayers.
All right. Ambassador Sam Brownback, Ambassador at Large for Religious Freedom, International Religious Freedom. Be praying for him. It was a tough slog for him to get confirmed. 49-49, we've talked about that on here, with the vice president casting the tie-breaking vote. Amazing that religious liberty is controversial. All right, coming up next, some parents in Staten Island say political correctness has gone too far. Officials at one public school have canceled a father-daughter dance after LGBT advocates argued the dance excludes other genders. Fox News commentator Todd Starnes is here next. Don't go away.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, That's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As Senior Director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I am Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, a Staten Island elementary school canceled its traditional father-daughter dance because of the Department of Education's new gender guidelines. Now, the public school 65 had the event scheduled for this Friday, February the 9th, until the school's parent-teacher association realized it would not comply with the transgender and gender nonconforming student guidelines, which went into effect in March of 2017. With us now is Todd Starnes, Fox News commentator, best-selling author, and host of Todd Starnes' radio show. Todd, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks a lot, Tony. Great to be with you this afternoon.
I mean, this is a bit crazy. I mean, there was a point in time when public policy recognized the importance of fathers in the lives of their children, both sons and daughters. Now we see public policy trying to, eradicate the whole idea that fatherhood exists.
Well, that's right. And that is the new policy on the books for this school year here in New York City. You know, this is interesting that it's happening in Staten Island. Out of all of the boroughs here in New York City, Staten Island is the one red dot. That is the most conservative borough here in New York City, where a lot of firefighters and police officers live, pretty conservative folks over there. And so a lot of moms and dads were really angry when they found out that the annual father-daughter dance, which is a longstanding tradition, was being canceled. And what I find interesting, Tony, is that the New York City LGBT community liaison said that the reason it needed to be canceled, this dance, is because a father-daughter dance might trigger boys who identify as girls and mommies who identify as daddies.
Incredible that we have a small percentage that may be offended by something like this, that we're going to eradicate something that has historically been an event that so many, especially the girls, the young girls, have looked forward to this special event with their fathers.
You know, we had Penny Nance from Concerned Women for America on my radio show a couple of days ago talking about this, and he brought up an interesting
an interesting thought about the purpose of these dances. She was saying that these dances are meant for fathers to teach their daughters how they should be, they should expect to be treated on dates when they get older. You know, that those fathers are really setting a bar, setting an example of how a guy should treat a girl on a date. And unfortunately, here in Staten Island, the little girls are no longer going to be able to experience that because of political correctness.
Now, New York is a bit unique because the New York City, which has their council, which is almost like a legislature, it's so big, they actually control, if I'm not mistaken, they control education policy in New York.
That's right. It's the Board of the New York City Board of Education, and they control all of the public schools in the boroughs, and Staten Island is one of the boroughs. This is happening at an elementary school, PS 65. And again, this is a conservative, a very conservative part of New York City. And moms and dads are just furious. They're sick and tired of the of this gender war that they are being forced to wage every day of the public school system. So, you know, again, it's important for people around the nation to pay attention to what's happening here in New York City. Because what happens here has a way of infecting and infesting other school districts around the country.
Yeah, I mean, when you figure you get California on one side, New York on the other, and the rest of America gets the squeeze. And it does. It does have a significant impact. But, Todd, what's the logical outcome of something like this where we want to deny fathers and daughters? I mean, this whole notion of genderless non-conforming gender guidelines. I mean, this is make-believe, and ultimately it just leads to total anarchy and chaos.
That's right. I mean, again, we're talking about going beyond the transgender movement into something now called gender fluidity and gender non-conforming. The biological scientists at Facebook have determined that there are now 72 genders. And I suspect that number is going to grow. And as much as, you know, people might be tempted to laugh or just mock what's happening out there, they need to understand there is a concerted effort to deconstruct gender in America. And why is that? Ultimately, Tony, I believe this is an attack on the family, the family unit.
Without question.
And that's what people are experiencing in Staten Island to some degree with the cancellation of this popular father-daughter dance.
But people also need to realize, Todd, that with this effort to deconstruct, they are linking it to the power and force of government to get it done, because they know people logically reason defies where they're trying to take the society, so they use the force of government to do it.
They do, and there's been some local news coverage on this story. The New York Post interviewed some moms and dads, and they said that so many parents are terrified of speaking out because they're afraid of being targeted by LGBT activists. And Tony, you and I both know that can be a pretty difficult thing to stand if you're not used to the attacks. It can get pretty ugly.
Yeah.
So that's why so many moms and dads are being silent. And that is the exact opposite of what parents need to be doing. They've got to speak up. They've got to stand up.
Without question. Todd, we're up against a break, but quickly, I understand that under the provisions of this, mothers could come with their daughters, so it wasn't excluding others who didn't have fathers. Is that correct?
That's right. They were that had nothing to do with it at all.
All right. Todd Starnes, as always, my friend, great to have you on the program.
Thanks, Tony.
All right. Todd Starnes, he's written about this. If you want to read his piece, go to TonyPerkins.com. And follow the links over. Okay, coming up next, the Senate, both Republicans and Democrats have agreed to a 2-year budget deal in an effort to keep the lights on of the federal government, which will go off tomorrow night at midnight. It now goes to the House, but conservatives are concerned because it raises the budget caps. Jim Jordan, founding chairman of the Freedom Caucus, is here next. Don't go away. We're back with more right after this.
you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay. Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue. If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along. All right, just as a government shutdown loomed, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell announced the Senate had reached a bipartisan two-year budget deal. Now, the Senate deal lifts the debt limit, but doesn't include protections for so-called Dreamers, the DACA. It lifts the budget caps, which increases government spending. It now goes over to the House, where its fate is uncertain, because many conservatives are concerned, and rightfully so, that this does not address the out of control spending that the federal government has been engaged in for the last almost two decades. Joining us now is Congressman Jim Jordan. He represents the 4th Congressional District of Ohio. He serves on the Committee on the Judiciary and the Committee on Oversight and Government Reform, and he is the founding chairman of the House Freedom Caucus. Jim, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Tony.
All right, your initial take on the deal. Okay,
that's pretty
straightforward.
Yep, no, it is. I mean, you can't increase spending like this. Almost a quarter of $1 trillion in discretionary spending increase in 1 year, contributing to what will be close to a $1 trillion deficit. This is not what the American people elected us to do. This is a victory for the swamp and a loss for the American taxpayer.
The raising of the debt ceiling, is there a limit on that, or is it just another unlimited raising of the ceiling?
You know what? We haven't even seen the legislation, the details of that in particular. We're hearing about the deal. My understanding is it's a time. So for a certain time, the Treasury will be able to borrow. But I have to check that, because at the time we've been in meetings since then on other issues. But when we first got briefed on what the Senate was likely to take up, they haven't taken it up yet. They haven't sent it to the House. Our understanding was it was going to be some time extension on the ability of the Treasury to borrow money.
See, that's an interesting thing, because if I'm not mistaken, we go back a few years, and prior to that, there was always a dollar amount in terms of, then we went to these time periods, which allows unlimited raising of the debt within this time period. That's a subtle but significant change.
I agree, and let me be clear. I don't know which route they're taking. It's my understanding that it's the time extension route, but I could be wrong because we haven't seen it yet. and the Senate hasn't sent us any legislation yet. So when we see it, we'll know more. But that's what's being talked about.
But I see, but we're also talking about a 13% increase in spending across government.
Huge increase in spending. Huge increase in spending. And again, you know, I've said this on your show before, Tony, we make the job of being a member of Congress way too complicated. The job is pretty basic. What did you tell your constituents, the voters of this great country, you were going to do, how you were going to go fight for them, their family, what you were going to try to accomplish on their behalf, standing up for their values, their principles? What was that that you told them? And I know, just as sure as I'm talking to you, I know we didn't tell them, oh, put Republicans in power and we will grow government, increase spending at this pace. We did not tell them that, not even close. So that is what's so frustrating about this agreement, and particularly when we were in such a strong position to do what needed to be done on national defense, but hold the line on all the other spending and begin to deal with this overall debt and deficit problem that we have. We were in such a good position, particularly after Schumer's shutdown, a few weeks ago, but yet that didn't happen.
You know, I know that many of our listeners, Jim, are thinking right now, oh, wait a minute, when Obama was in the White House and the Republicans didn't have the upper hand there, the Republicans would seem to be always on the short end of the stick, and the Democrats would get what they wanted when they were driving the train. Now the Republicans control the House. They have the White House, and they have, you know, the majority, not 60, but they have a majority in the Senate. But it seems like we're allowing Chuck Schumer to dictate the policy for the Republican Party.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. This spending package, you referenced previous president, this spending package is the second largest spending increase on the discretionary side in the past decade, second only to the stimulus package. And we all know what a boondoggle that was. So that's how bad this was. And you're right. It comes down to one simple principle. We don't have right now enough Republicans with the political will to do what they told the voters they were going to do. It's that basic. And until we get Republicans who are willing to stand firm on the principles that we were elected to stand firm on, we're not going to win. And that's whether that's Obamacare or spending. Now, we won on some things, on taxes. We're hanging tough on trying to hold people accountable who did wrong things like voting for FBI. But we have not done it on spending, and we have not done it on Obamacare. And that's a problem. That's a big problem.
So there are some Republicans saying, well, if the conservatives in the House won't vote for this, it will force the speaker to go to Democrats, will make the bill even worse. What do you say?
We sent over a good bill yesterday that we all voted for, a bill that said we're not going to increase spending outside of defense. We're going to do what needs to be done for our troops. We're not going to increase the rest of the government, build government. We're not going to just raise the debt ceiling without getting anything in exchange long term that structurally helps with the situation. We sent a good bill over yesterday, and if the Senate doesn't like that and they send us something back, we say, sorry, just in case you didn't get the message, we're going to send you the same bill back that we sent to you yesterday. That's the position we should take. And do you think Chuck Schumer is going to shut down the government after what he went through 3 weeks ago? I don't think
so. Good point.
This is so obvious.
All right, we're up against the break. What should our listeners be doing?
Keep up the good fight. They're the reason this country is so great. People like them with the values they have. Talk to their member of Congress. Encourage them not to vote for this big spending increase.
All right. Congressman Jim Jordan,
Thanks, brother.
Great to have you on the program. All right, you heard him. Call your member of Congress and ask them what they're going to do. Are they going to increase government spending? They're going to add more water to the swamp or drain it? All right, when we come back, Ken Ham, the latest Christian leader to be uninvited to a college campus. That's next. Don't go away.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out. And all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, That's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, yesterday, and if you missed yesterday's program, it was at the beginning of the program, I interviewed Congressman Tim Walberg from Michigan about the Higher Education Reauthorization Act, the first major override since 1965. It's called PROSPER, the PROSPER Act, which, among many things, would protect free speech on college and university campuses. And this has become a huge problem, and we talk about it in yesterday's program. So I'm not going to repeat that, but I would encourage you to go back and listen to it, because it's quite significant when you see what's happening on these college campuses and what these young people are being really introduced to, this totalitarian view of speech. It's frightening, and We've seen that what is on college campuses eventually becomes part of what's in the halls of government. But the Reform Act will not be passed in time to stop the University of Central Oklahoma from unplugging the freedom of speech for Answers in Genesis, Ken Ham. Ken is a speaker, author, president, CEO, and founder of Answers in Genesis, and the creator of the Creation Museum and the Ark Encounter. And he was scheduled to be there as a part of a forum. And I was notified that he's been uninvited. So I invited him to join us here on Washington Watch. Ken Ham, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, hi, Tony. Great to be with you again.
So you are now joining the elite club of the uninvited, which would include General Jerry Boykin, Franklin Graham, myself. Where we're seeing this, these trumpeters of tolerance who are the most intolerant of anybody out there today. Hey, tell our listeners what happened.
Well, the University of Central Oklahoma, I mean, this is a pretty conservative state, considered to be in the Bible Belt area. Their student association managed to get permission. Apparently, they had to fight for it, but got permission to invite me to give a presentation on March the 5th at the university. And, of course, I'd be dealing with issues of what, we specialize in regard to origins and science and creation evolution and, doing what I sort of did with the Bill Nye debate and talking about different worldviews to interpret evidence differently and how that affects the culture and so on. And what happened was that was all arranged. The university signed a contract. It's a legally binding contract. It was signed by the president of the student association and the vice president for academic affairs for the university. But then, after this had all happened, a couple of weeks later, we got a call and said that there was a problem in that the LGBTQ movement on campus, and particularly because of a tenured professor who sponsors the LGBT groups on that campus and who also sponsors the Safe Sex Carnival, which is absolutely perverse at the university. And, you know, the same university sponsored a drag queen event. But because the LGBTQ people are so bullied, the students there, that there was a big problem. And they said, we're going to have to cancel because of this pressure from the LGBTQ group. And so they canceled and said, we can't have you here because they really put pressure on us. And it just shows you the intolerance we're seeing across this nation in regard to free speech. The LGBTQ groups, is what I found is, you know, they talk about inclusiveness and they talk about not discriminating, but they're the ones that will discriminate against those that they believe that don't agree with them. I mean, I wasn't even going to talk on LGBT issues or anything like that, but yet they put the pressure because of who I am, what I represent as a Christian, as a conservative. They wanted to have me cancel from the campus, and so that's what they did. And you know what's interesting, Tony, when you read the actual university website, they say they're committed to inclusive educational environment. They say they're committed to fostering a learning environment where free inquiry and expression are encouraged, and that they're a diverse community based on free exchange of ideas. But what that means is, as long as it's not conservative or Christian, that's really what's happening in this nation. People need to wake up to it, because we're losing our freedoms, and universities are no longer a place where you have free speech. They're shutting that down.
I find it a bit ironic that you were scheduled to speak in the school's Constitution Hall. What irony. I mean, the Constitution that guarantees us the freedom of speech and the freedom of religion?
Wasn't that one of the first things the Founding Fathers wanted to make sure of America, and that is to have freedom of religion, free speech, the free exercise of religion? That's what the First Amendment is all about. But we're seeing more and more across this nation that secularists, they interpret freedom of religion as freedom from anything Christian, freedom from anything conservative. That's what they want. They want freedom from that. And, you know, it's interesting. Think about this. I must have incredible power. I mean, the name of Ken Ham invokes such fear in the hearts and minds of the LGBT group. If I came on that campus, that I must be so powerful that they'd be frightened that I would influence people to believe something that they don't or something like that. And it's interesting. They asked me to come and do a presentation and then to have 45-minute question time. And I agreed to that. So they could have come along and asked me anything they wanted to there. I actually had a phone call from the student president who said initially, you know, we're not sure this would work or not, but would you agree to put in writing you won't say anything about LGBT or even in the question time if there's any issues like that, that you'd agree not to say anything or whatever? And I said, you know, I don't agree to people putting restrictions on me. I mean, I wasn't even going to talk about that issue, but I need to be free to answer whatever questions and so on, and we couldn't agree to that, but that didn't matter anyway. The LGBT group so bullied these students to stop me coming, and as you know, we're seeing that sort of stuff at Berkeley and all sorts of places across this nation.
But Oklahoma, I mean, I actually grew up in Oklahoma. Oklahoma, one of the reddest states in the country, one of the most conservative, as you pointed out, in the Bible Belt. But these college campuses have become these bastions of totalitarianism, to where conservative and Christian ideas are completely walled out, and anyone who dares breach their little kingdom that they've made incurs their wrath. And I think people do need to wake up as to what's happening across America.
Yeah, there's a talk about tolerance, but they're becoming the most intolerant of all and on these campuses, and they're indoctrinating generations of kids. They don't want them to hear other information. They don't want them to think for themselves. They don't want them to hear different views. They want to impose a particular view on them and isolate them from other influences, and it's destroying the country and raising up generations who can't think for themselves and who've been totally indoctrinated in, you know, secular philosophy. And that even many young people, I find, even in churches, are thinking that, oh, when you speak authoritatively, as we would do, as a Christian, I speak authoritatively about what I believe, about the Bible, about marriage, about abortion. As soon as you speak authoritatively, they accuse you of hate speech. Yet they're the ones that show the most disdain and hate for people like us. And in fact, I think I was even on your program talking about this when we lit up the ark that we have, the life-size ark attraction, when we lit that up with the rainbow and said we were taking back the rainbow, the LGBT people got on my Twitter and Facebook, and some of the most hateful comments, personal attacks, using blasphemy, using expletives, they're the ones that show this hate, and yet they accuse us of hate. I don't hate them.
There's a psychological term for that. It's called projection. And it is on, we do see the hatred and the vitriol that is reflected most commonly in the social media realm. Ken Ham, so you had a contract. It was signed. Are there any thoughts about legal recourse?
You know, we haven't done anything in that regard. It was a legally binding contract. That's true. To have me there to speak, to pay for expenses, to pay an honorarium. It was all in the contract, and it was signed not only by the president of the Student Association of Oklahoma Central University, but also by the vice president of academic affairs. So the university itself signed that contract, and so it is legally binding on them, and yet they just, they just say, well, so what? They believe in inclusiveness, and I think there was some statement that someone told me today they made about safety of students and so on, and inclusiveness. Well, what about including Christians like us, and what about honoring a contract that you actually signed? Well, what are you teaching students when you tell them, so we signed a contract, so what? Doesn't matter. What is that saying to the student body?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I do think that there is a time when this is not about Ken Ham. It's not about Answers in Genesis. It's about the freedom of speech. And it is about what is happening on college campuses across the country. And I think it's time that we do stand up and use the tools that we have, the rights we have as American citizens, to make sure that the voice of Christians and conservatives is not snuffed out by the totalitarian left that is emerging in this country. Ken, great to have you on the program, and I appreciate all that you do. And I don't think it was the name Ken Ham is what struck fear in him. I think it was the accent. That's what
scared him. Yeah, absolutely. One from down under.
Yeah, all right, Ken. Thanks so much for being with us.
Okay, thank you, Tony. Bye-bye.
All right, Ken Ham, Answers in Genesis. Check out the website. If you've never been to the Creation Museum, you really ought to go. It is well done, top notch, just absolutely great. Great educational. I like to take in those events. We went there on a kind of a family vacation, and I like to have a little educational element in everything we do, and that is really good. Now, we were planning actually last month to go up to the Ark Encounter, but that global warming-driven cold front came through, and it was down to about zero, and so it was a bit cold to be exploring the Ark. But my plans are to get there sometime this summer, because Ken and his crew do a great job. But I saw this. One of his people sent this to me last night, and I thought the timing was perfect when we had Congressman Wahlberg on yesterday talking about the higher educational reform bill. And this is at the heart. This is happening on college campuses across the country. I mean, it's happened to me. It's happened to just about every conservative leader, that you have a few agitators. And it's not all. I mean, it's not. Look, I believe, and I have supported the rights of people I disagree with to have the freedom to speak. I mean, it's one of the reasons I served in our nation's military. one of the reasons I served as a police officer. I believe we all have rights. The laws protect us all equally. And I'm not afraid. I am not afraid, nor should you be afraid, of others to have the freedom to speak their ideas, no matter how flawed they might be. We're not afraid of that. But the left is afraid to have that debate because they cannot defend their views. I mean, think about it for a moment. When they talk about freedom and they want people to be inclusive, okay, what does that mean to you? Inclusive, am I included? Well, no, you're not included. Well, then how can you be inclusive? Or, you know, I believe that no one should be able to say what truth is. Okay, is what you just declared true? I mean, they cannot logically defend their position. Social science doesn't back it up. This whole idea of whatever Todd says, New York is now on 70, or what was it, Facebook, 73 different genders, 78 genders. I mean, come on. How do you defend that? You can't. So what they want to do is they want to shut down the discussion of that using the force of law and the penalty of law that comes with it. And that's the only way they can force us. That is what I mean when I say totalitarian. That's how those historically they have worked. They repress, they suppress, they punish nonconforming thought. And folks, you might think, well, you know what? I just don't want to get involved in this. This is not my thing. This is going to reshape our whole idea of freedom in this country. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion. All of that will take a back seat to a very small but vocal minority that is organized, but they're vicious. And I understand that. That's fine. And by the way, I defend their right to speak. I defend their right to defend their position. They have that right. But they don't have a right to teach my children that what I'm teaching my children is wrong. They don't have a right to exclude the viewpoint that I represent from the public square. They don't have that right. The Constitution does not give them that right. The Constitution gives us a right to both have access and have a discussion. And from that, educate people. And then as a society, as a nation, we make choices. But you can't make informed, educated choices unless you can first have the discussion. All right, folks, out of time. I want to thank you for joining us again today. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, and they're more relevant to us today than ever. When you've prayed, God has given you your plan and your call to stand. No matter what comes your way, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. Again, that's 1-866-372-7234. 372-7234.